This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. If you're like most of our listeners, every day you depend on us to deliver the latest news and analysis. You expect to hear about issues from around the world, across the country, and from right here in Iowa. And you expect all that delivered to your ears with the very highest standards of journalism. So we thought it would be a good idea for us to share a little about how we work, our standards and ethics, and how we respond to you when you, the listener, feel we fall short of the mark. A little later in the hour, we'll be joined by Iowa Public Radio News Director Jonathan All. First, though, joining us from the studios of National Public Radio in Washington, D.C., NPR's ombudsman, journalist, author, media critic, and educator Alicia Shepard. Shepard joined NPR as ombudsman in October of 2007. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Happy to be here, Ben.
Great you could join us. Remind us what the ombudsman does.
Well, it's even a tricky word, but the ombudsman is, the word itself actually goes all the way 200 years back to Sweden, and that it is actually a Swedish word. And so people often ask, are you okay, or shouldn't you be the ombudswoman? But the term is really to be a liaison. And so I am the public's representative for National Public Radio. So it's fitting. They just started the position in 2000, so it's relatively new. It's more common in newspapers. But what do? I explain NPR to the listeners and the listeners to NPR. So every day, I get about 100 emails, and this is based on what people have heard on the air or what they now read at NPR.org, which has become a much more extensive website since I joined in 2007. And so my job is to determine if they have a complaint or a criticism or a concern that it rises to the level of being significant, then I will investigate it. Of course, that sounds very subjective. What does that mean to rise to the level of being significant? And in that case, I've got 30 years of being as all the things that you mentioned, journalist, author, educator. And so I know, what is a good story, where NPR may have fallen short. And so that's a decision that I ultimately make. And then if I investigate something, I will put it on my blog, which is at npr.org/ombudsman.
Mm-hmm. Describe your relationship to the rest of the NPR staff producing content. You are independent from them.
Yes, it is an unusual relationship, to be sure. I actually am paid by NPR, and I have an office on the 7th floor of the building, so I'm not connected to the newsroom, which is, down on the 2nd and 3rd floor. And I am literally independent in the sense that whatever I investigate, whatever questions I ask, whatever I put on the blog, no one is behind me saying, no, you can't do that. And so I treat it the way I have always treated any story in journalism. I get a complaint. I look into it. I will ask. Let's just talk about what I just posted, which was last week, NPR did a story about Greg Craig, the White House counsel, who suddenly announced his decision to leave. And Nina Totenberg was on air, and she was doing what is called a two-way. The reporter, was talking with Michelle Norris, the host of All Things Considered, and she referred to Rahm Emanuel, who is the White House chief of staff. And in the second reference, she referred to him as Rahm. Rahm said this, Rahm did that. Well, we both know in standard news professional conduct, you refer to someone in a second reference by their last name. So I asked her about this. This isn't really egregious, except that, maybe people who are outside of Washington, D.C. might perceive that as being kind of chummy and inside the beltway mm-hmm. when you refer to a White House official by his first name.
Didn't we have something similar during the 2008 campaign? Hillary was called Hillary often, and Obama was called Senator Obama.
Yes, and in that case, I actually went back and had the library investigate that, and I think it turned out that it occurred like 41 times, and that it may have been five of those times where NPR reporters did that, and the rest were guests saying that on air. But I'd also draw the distinction that the part of the reason it was done was not out of disrespect for Hillary Clinton, but it was to distinguish her from her husband. And so when you said Clinton on the second reference, that made it, you know, question, well, which Clinton? NPR did try to then say, let's always say Senator Clinton mm-hmm. on the second reference.
Also, wasn't part of that she advertised her campaign, promoted herself in yard signs or wherever as Hillary.
Right.
For precisely the same reason. What about the titles for the president? We have all these choices: President Obama, Mr. Obama, simply Obama, or Mr. President. What are the NPR's best practices there?
Yeah, well, I mentioned that in the blog posting that I did at today, npr.org/ombudsman, if anyone is interested, that I will tell you, Ben, that probably a day doesn't go by that someone hears a story on the air that concerns President Obama and notices that NPR calls him on the second reference Mr. Obama. However, I'm telling you that what their ears pick up on is the Mr. Obama. And so they feel that it's disrespectful. I get, well, you would never have done, NPR would never have done that for George Bush. And in fact, NPR's style, and of course, listeners are welcome to criticize the style, but the style has been, and very consistently, back to the mid-70s, to say President, we'll use Obama, President Obama, second reference to say Mr. Obama or the President. And what listeners don't hear, or just goes right by because you're accustomed to it, is the President Obama today, you know, was in China. Mr. Obama said such and such. And I get the need to have a style, and that, and I certainly convey, which is part of my job, that NPR listeners, or some of them, don't like it.
Okay, NPR's Ombudsman Alicia Shepard with us for this hour. A little later in the hour, Iowa Public Radio's news director Jonathan Aull will be joining us. So we'd like to reach out to our listeners now to ask, what questions, comments, or criticisms do you have about the way we cover the news? Alicia's with us the entire hour, and we'll address more state news coverage issues in our second half hour when Jonathan Aull joins us. Those of us working at Iowa Public Radio, or NPR, and its member stations abide by a code of ethics, Alicia. Simply give us an idea of what the types of things this code of ethics addresses.
Well, I'd be happy to, but I just sometimes people want to see it for themselves, and that is on the website at npr.org/ombudsman, the code of ethics, which ends up being about, I think, 22 pages long. But, you know, the basic purpose of an ethics code is to set up guidelines so that journalists are very clear about what is and isn't okay, and the things that they should be thinking about. So conflict of interest, you have to be very careful and mindful of that, because at the end of the day, what an ethics code is about is maintaining a news organization's credibility, and that is its most important asset. So plagiarism, as I mentioned, conflict of interest, how you deal with children, how you have to be, you try to be respectful of sources. I can tell you that there are basically four main tenets to an ethics code, and NPR's is much more detailed, but it's, you know, seek truth and report it, minimize harm, be accountable, and act independently. And it's that second part that I mentioned, minimize harm, that I think is not in a lot of ethics codes that I've looked at. I also teach media ethics at Georgetown University, and they, in some ways, ethics codes seem to be guides, but also ways of protecting a news organization.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an example where minimize harm would especially come into play in recent memory?
Yes, I can think of an example where NPR put up some photos, and they were photos of two rather obese women. And the headline of the photo and the story was about how, this was actually back during the election, and how Ohioans were doing prior to the election. And the headline said, "Ohioans struggling, can't even afford meat." And then it had this front-on picture of these two, by anyone's definition, obese women. And all of the photo was true, the headline was true. The impact, though, was to make them targets of ridicule on the internet. And you would not believe how many emails I got. I can't believe NPR is running, you know, a story like that. You know, if they it's a good thing they can't afford meat because they don't need it. And so NPR inadvertently or unwittingly, wasn't thinking about the impact on these two women, or the more subtle subtext, which is that people who don't have money tend to buy food that is very starchy. And, you know, so there's that whole cultural aspect of the story.
So briefly, one way to sum this up is you're sort of a monitor. The people producing the news features and spots are mm-hmm. certainly aware of all these standards. And your job is to say, well, let's look at this. Maybe you strayed here. And also
just to get them thinking about it. And one of the other things that's a real great benefit of the job is that I go around and visit public radio stations. And journalists are, you know, who work at Iowa Public Radio or NPR are well trained, and they know how to do this, and they do a lot of it every day by rote. And so sometimes it's like, wait, I'm there to ask the question of, you know, did you think about this, or what were you thinking when you decided to do that? And I think I at least raise questions.
Joining us from Washington, D.C., from NPR, NPR's ombudsman, Alicia Shepard. Alicia, I wanted to mention a blog that you wrote saying that NPR has more than 400 reporters, editors, producers, and analysts on its news team. None is more of a lightning rod than Juan Williams. Now, explain why, because this has to do with Juan's work not only for NPR, but also for Fox News as well.
Yes, and in fact, most of the time, the criticism or complaints that I get about Juan Williams have to do with things that he says on Fox News. So let me back up and say that Juan Williams has, for over 10 years, worked at both NPR and at Fox. When he works at NPR, initially he was a correspondent. He was edited. There was a lot of care taken with anything that went on the air, as is true for any NPR story. When he works at Fox, he is more in a commentating role where he's part of, I think he's mainly on Chris Wallace's Sunday show where reporters discuss the news. Over time, this became a problem for NPR, and so they put Juan on the status of being a commentator now, or a news analyst, but largely a commentator. So he is no longer considered an employee. This was over a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. So he is basically hired to give his opinion. Because we talked a little earlier, Ben, about the ethics code, and the ethics code is very clear that you have to be thinking about NPR anytime you do something outside of NPR. So you can't say something on another station that you would not be allowed to say on NPR.
If I may, I wanted to play 30 seconds of audio of Juan Williams on Bill O'Reilly's show to sort of demonstrate to our listeners, if they're not listeners or viewers of Fox News, how mm-hmm. Juan Williams sounds a little bit different. This is Juan Williams on Bill O'Reilly's show from January, just after the inauguration of the new president.
Let me just tell you this. If you think about liabilities for President Obama that are close to him, Joe Biden's up there, but Michelle Obama's right there. Michelle Obama, you know, she's got this Stokely Carmichael in a designer dress thing going. If she starts talking, as Mary Catherine was suggesting, her instinct is to start with this blame America, you know, I'm the victim. If that stuff starts to come out, people will go bananas, and she'll go from being the new Jackie O to being something
she's
of
not
an albatross.
She's not going to do that. All right, finally, I'm going to give you both 20 seconds on...
Okay, so the fallout with that, from that was that NPR reacted, and you found a comfortable position for Juan Williams by renaming him.
Well, he had already been renamed, and then it was determined that NPR, when... Juan Williams is on does not say who also appears on Fox. However, when Juan Williams is on Fox, they always put the chyron, the tag underneath him that says NPR news analyst. Mm-hmm. And so NPR asked that they stop doing that after that particular comment. You got to know, right, Ben, that a comment like that is over the top when Bill O'Reilly is saying, I don't think that's going to happen.
When Bill O'Reilly says, put the brakes on
right,
it.
Right. Juan, you're going too far.
Alicia Shepard is joining us from NPR in Washington. NPR's ombudsman will stay with us for the second half hour after we take a short break. Also joining us, Iowa Public Radio's news director, Jonathan Aull. We want to know your questions, comments, or criticisms about the way we cover the news. When we come back, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org, giving you a peek behind the scenes of public radio when we come back. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Every day you depend on us to deliver high-quality news and analysis, so we're spending this hour sharing a little bit about the way we work, our standards and ethics, and how we respond when you, the listener, feel we fall short of the mark. Joining us from the studio is NPR in Washington, NPR's ombudsman, journalist, author, media critic, and educator Alicia Shepard. She joined NPR as their ombudsman in October of 2007. You can find out more information by going to npr.org/ombudsman. Joining us from Iowa Public Radio Studios in the Capitol, our news director, Jonathan Aull. Good afternoon to you, Jonathan.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Glad you could join us. I don't know if you've been listening to some of our conversation, had a moment from your other work to join.
I have. Yeah.
We talked a little bit with Alicia about the standards, the codes of ethics, the best practices that are in place for NPR. Is there any difference in those standards compared to the ones that Iowa Public Radio aspires to?
Not particularly. Iowa Public Radio adopted NPR's code of ethics as its own code of ethics early on in the creation of Iowa Public Radio. So with very minor tweaks here and there, there's really no substantial difference at all. And we look to NPR for guidance on the ethics and policies, and Alicia's blog is one of my bookmarks, one that I constantly go to, and I refer a lot of listeners to the ombudsman's office at NPR and have done that for many, many years. So I think that in a lot of just about every way possible, we are in concert with NPR. Our major network in that capacity.
Let's go to Jamie in Decatur County. Jamie, hi, welcome to our program.
First, I want to say that I really enjoy NPR, Iowa Public Radio, and I do have great respect for the ombudsman's position. I think that she probably deals with a lot of things on a daily basis, but I was a little shocked to hear that she didn't think that anybody who liked NPR would also be enjoying Bill O'Reilly, and I'm one who watches him every night, but I also listen to you guys every day. And I was shocked. I wasn't for sure if I heard you correctly or if I just misunderstood what you had said.
Yeah, I think you misunderstood me. I just said that there is a line, where people who, I mean, you are not an exception by any means, but I think that in general, the NPR listeners are not big Fox News watchers, just in general, which of course doesn't mean that it shouldn't happen, but I just think in general, based on the emails that I get. But on the other hand, I say great to you because I think news consumers should listen to as many different voices as possible to find out what's going on.
Jamie, thank you for your call. Let's go to West Des Moines. Karen, hi. Welcome to our program.
Hello. I just would like to say that I listen to NPR all the time, and I listen to it because I appreciate the tone of the discourse. No, I don't. You know, I listen to topics I don't know anything or sometimes don't care anything about. But I am looking for a certain kind of discourse, not the shouting, not the interrupting, and the fact that you're on today. It was reminding me that I was just astonished this morning on Tom Ashbrook's show when there was a particular guest, and I don't know the name, but another guest was offering an opinion that differed from his on the topic of charging for internet content. And this guest just interrupted constantly, and Ashbrook kept trying to sit on him. And I thought, I hope he never has that person on again, because he doesn't know the rules of the game, sort of, on public radio. If he's on Fox, and I do watch those shows, and I do watch sometimes Chris Matthews, and it drives me nuts. I have to shut it off because it's not respectful.
Interesting, Karen, your point, not only what is said, but the manner of discourse, Alicia.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's totally true. I think just in life in general, it's really not what you say, but how you say it. And I agree with Karen totally. I mean, and this is the same thing for my job. I mean, listeners call up and sometimes they're just so angry and they want to argue with me. And I feel like it's my job to listen to them, because maybe they have a good point. And even if I don't necessarily agree to it, I need to listen to it. And it was Stephen Brill who was on Tom Ashbrook this morning, who is a big proponent of paid content. And the reason I know this is because I was watching a Twitter feed about it. And so I brought up that because, in addition to the ethics code, NPR has also developed a social media guideline. And I wondered if Iowa Public Radio has adopted that, Jonathan.
Almost. We're looking at some possible additions from the BBC that has also put out social media guidelines for its journalistic staff. And we're looking at how those could be combined into one comprehensive policy.
This NPR posted the new guidelines, Alicia, just to remind our listeners, to make staff aware of the use of the wide array of new social media tools. What new challenges come with the new media? What do they pose to maintaining NPR's credibility?
Well, and probably the same. They're no different than maintaining Iowa Public Radio's credibility. There are tools such as Facebook and Twitter that are awesome in terms of reaching people and finding sources. Neva Grant, who's a producer with Morning Edition, was looking for families that had two members who are being deployed to Iraq or to Afghanistan, and that was a way for her to find them, on the NPR Facebook page. But then, the downfalls can be that your personal life is really becomes public if you try to use them interchangeably, and in some ways that can hurt your credibility as a journalist.
Winding up the hour with NPR's Ombudsman Alicia Shepard joining us live from NPR in Washington. Also, Iowa Public Radio News Director Jonathan Aull from Iowa Public Radio Studios in Des Moines. Jonathan, I wanted to address this because I think there's some confusion, or people would like to know how this works. We regularly hear Iowa Public Radio reporters on NPR's Morning Edition. Explain how that happens and the relationship between NPR News and IPR News.
Well, there's two different ways that can happen. Either one of the reporters in Iowa can pitch a story to National Public Radio, contact one of the appropriate editor, and in our case, that's the Midwest Bureau Chief, editor named Ken Barkas, who's based in Cleveland, and tell Ken that we've got this story, we think that it would be good for NPR, and then Ken takes that to the editorial meetings. He's our advocate at the editorial meetings at NPR. The other way that can happen is if NPR realizes that there's a story in Iowa that they would love to have told, they will contact us and say, do you have a reporter working on this, or could you have somebody who works on could work on this story? And then from that point, Iowa Public Radio kind of lets go a little bit, and then that reporter works directly with the editors at NPR in the reporting process, in the writing process, in the production process, and then it gets broadcast on NPR. So there's two different ways that can happen. But what I can definitely tell you, I've been in public radio long enough to tell you that the bureau chief system has been fabulous for local stations, that there is an editor who lives in this part of the country who is our advocate at NPR editorial meetings, has meant that reporters like Joyce Russell and Jeanine Beck, Dean Borg, Rob Dillard, and now Alex Hoyer and Pat Blank can be get their great story ideas on to NPR programs. And that has been a fabulous process.
An email from Lisa. She writes, I noticed a little little, if any, third-party candidate coverage on NPR News during the last presidential election. Will there be an effort to improve this the next time around, asks Lisa.
Well, I'll be bluntly honest, because this was an issue that I dealt with Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich in the last round. And I think it's one of these self-fulfilling prophecies where NPR determines that someone like Ron Paul doesn't have a chance, so why they have limited resources in people and money, so why put the effort into it? And they will address and acknowledge those people, especially like with Ron Paul. I said, if nothing else, the guy is an internet phenomenon in his fundraising, and so you need to pay a little bit more attention to him.
Let's go to Ralph in Bettendorf. Hi, Ralph. Welcome to our program.
Yes. Thanks for doing what you do. My question is, do you think it would be reasonable for NPR reporters to stop referring to people as masterminds when they commit horrible acts? It just seems to offend my sensibility when someone who commits something horrendous is referred to as a mastermind.
Like the 9/11 mastermind. Mm-hmm.
Ralph, I'll look into that. Is that what you're hearing, that they talk about Sheikh Khalid Mohammed as a mastermind?
Right. I hear it on lots of different media sources, not just NPR.
Right. Well, I was going to say that it's just one of these things where the news media is always looking for the shortest way to say it, and that people get labels in front of them. I mean, what was it? Strongman Omar. What was the guy from Panama who was the...
Manuel Noriega. Strongman. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Strongman was always used in front of him. And I'll certainly can look into that. And, you know, again, I would encourage any of your listeners, if they have things that they're concerned about, to go to npr.org/ombudsman, and you can contact us that way.
Okay, Ralph, thank you very much. Let's go to neighboring Davenport, where Adam is. Hi, Adam. Welcome to our program.
I just wanted to compliment your ombudsman, if I'm saying that word right, because I've been around the country quite a bit, and NPR is the most consistent at all their local stations and such to try to provide the news in an unbiased way. I grew up in an area where it was all conservative talk radio all the time, and, you know, they would, in, say, the abortion debate, they would call them the pro-abortionists and the pro-lifers, and the NPR stations are all very good about referring to the groups by their chosen title. They're not referring to, say, the pro-lifers as the abortionists would want to say. They would want to refer to them as the anti-choice people. The NPR is the best about being as unbiased in that as possible throughout the country, not just locally here in Iowa.
Okay. Thank you, Adam, for that comment from Davenport. I think tying into that last call, many emails you've had about the Hassan case in at Fort Hood and the use of the word alleged. Quickly on that, what is the reason for always saying alleged when...
Well, because we, in our country, we have innocent until proven guilty, and there have been more than enough times where someone is accused of something, and then it turns out that they didn't do it. And so you do that to just protect yourself, actually, as a journalist, to say this is the person who's alleged to have done this. You know, look at how, with the Hassan case, people thought the woman policeman shot him first. And then now it turns, based on eyewitness accounts, now it turns out that it was another police officer who brought down Hassan. Mm-hmm. That's just a perfect example of, you know, why you wait until you get the facts. And I know there are many people who think, well, he did it. Everyone says he did it. But that's the way it works in this country, is that someone is alleged to have done something until they are convicted of it.
Alicia and Jonathan, what are the most common misperceptions you encounter in your work about public radio's role and the way it works? Are there some we haven't touched on? Jonathan, for instance.
The biggest one that I run into is that somehow Iowa Public Radio has a huge amount of influence on what happens on NPR programming. And I think that we do have a voice, and it's one that I exercise regularly. Earlier when I talked about emailing Ellen Weiss, she was in Kabul at the time, and she still emailed me back. So I think that we've developed those relationships where NPR does listen, but we are one of hundreds and hundreds of member stations, And we definitely are not shy about telling NPR when we think they're doing something exceptionally well or when they're doing something exceptionally poorly. But there is a misperception that we all get together every day and there's this one big meeting of everybody who works in public radio, and I could stand up and say, hey, I don't think that's a good idea, and something would happen by it. It's a very large, complex organization. We do have good relationships, and we do make our opinions known. We do pass on the comments from our listeners. Mm-hmm. It's not quite as easy as I can't call Steve Inskeep and say, hey, Steve, do this.
Right. Alicia, anything to add to that or another misperception?
Yeah, no, Jonathan was hitting on really the structure, because NPR is simply a content-producing organization. They produce Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Talk of the Nation, and another show, Tell Me More. But they need the public radio systems and Iowa Public Radio to air that content. And so what I often find is people think that NPR controls the public radio station. So, and that, so if something is on NPR, a person will call and be complaining about the public radio station or vice versa. So
And Alicia, you went through a lot of that with those Monsanto underwriting credits that were on a local public radio station and on a program produced by American Public Media. I read, because we've gotten a lot of those complaints as well, and I know that you went through that, where your first answer was, well, that wasn't us.
Right. And also Terry Gross, for example, with Fresh Air. That is a show that NPR distributes, but NPR does not have any editorial control over. But, you know, so when people call and say, I'm not going to donate money anymore, as an example, to Iowa Public Radio because I don't like the way that NPR is covering the Fort Hood, I say, well, you know, at the most, I don't know how many hours of NPR programming are on Iowa Public Radio. It isn't 24 hours of NPR programming. And I ask them to, isn't there other stuff? I mean, maybe you don't like some NPR stories, but, you know, BBC, as you said, American Public Radio. I mean, Jonathan, tell us what else is on Iowa Public Radio that doesn't have anything to do with NPR.
Well, Iowa Public Radio local productions like
this
program, and Talk of Iowa, the BBC, like the BBC News Hour that's on at 3 o'clock, mm-hmm. programming from American Public Media, from Public Radio International. There's many others that
Prairie Home Companion,
yeah.
Alicia, you Jonathan, know. let me break in here because we've got about a minute or 90 seconds left, and there's a nice email from Jeremy in Cedar Falls asking, what is the future of news radio? He says he's heard for years it's on its way out due to competition from other media, but he continues to have it as a staple in his home. Alicia, your comment on that, and then quickly followed by Jonathan.
There's a huge future. NPR's listenership is growing. Public radio listenership is growing. I think it's one of as other news organizations are shrinking and newspapers are dying, I think people are depending more and more on public radio because of the quality of NPR and the reporters at Iowa Public Radio and shows like this.
And actually, unlike newspapers, NPR is not seeing the dip in listenership that readership is being seen in newspapers, correct?
Yes, it's growing. Minnesota Public Radio is expanding right now.
Okay, Jonathan, about 30 seconds if you had a comment to close out the hour.
What separates public radio is, in my opinion, is our ability to provide great content to people, compelling stories, factual news reporting. The mode that we distribute that is definitely going to change, but people's appetite for that will not diminish, and there will be always an appetite for great storytelling and good journalism.
Thank you. Iowa Public Radio News Director Jonathan Aull joining us from Des Moines. Also, NPR's ombudsman, Alicia Shepard. We just had another email from Des Moines saying, is that correct, ombudsman? Yes, right, Alicia, it is correct,
yes.
Right? As funny as it sounds. I want to thank you, Alicia, for joining us from Washington, D.C. for this hour.
My pleasure.
The Exchange is produced by Jeff Schmidt and Catherine Perkins. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. Thanks for joining us.